Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Fantastic beyond comprehension.
Gripping beyond compare.
Astounding beyond belief.
The mightiest monster of them all.
See Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Primetime host Thomas Primetime Madness, and this is a first of what I hope to be many in regards to a re-release of an old episode. I'm moving, as I've stated in an episode I kind of released about a couple weeks ago, that I'm moving Tokyo SOS to its new home on the Absolution Network. This is mostly because I want to bring I have like three different sites. They're really all part of the 132 production banner, but I really don't do anything for the other sites anymore. There's places because at the time I really didn't have any place to put them as far as the Absolution Network, and I felt I wanted to split everything up, but I've now realized that probably better just to keep it all together. So I'm moving Tokyo SOS to its new place on the Absolution Network, which means I really gotta get started on updating that RSS feed. Anyhow, like I said, this is the first of what I hope to be many re-releases, and this is the first episode that me and Jesse did. Pretty much this entire episode is us talking about why we're Godzilla fans. Talking about Godzilla, talking about all the eras of Godzilla, basically going and doing a sort of rundown of the entire franchise, what we like about the franchise, why we like the special effects, and everything in between. At the time, I think we were really hopeful for doing this series on a monthly basis, of course not knowing what would come down the line. But anyways, so, I mean, and I think at the time, there was really not much known of the 2014 Godzilla. I think it was something that was still kind of rumorous. But we were looking forward to that, and we were looking forward to doing this new podcast. So I hope you enjoy it. It's me and Jesse on our first inaugural episode, where we tell you why we got together, how we got together, and why we love Godzilla. It's an hour and a half of just pure Godzilla fandom talk. So, enjoy.
Oh, no. They say he's got to go.
SOS, SOS, we are calling you live from Tokyo. This is the Tokyo SOS Podcast. This is the
one of the few, the only podcast devoted to Godzilla. Yes, that's right. We are a brand new podcast dedicated to reviewing every Godzilla movie ever done. Yes, we have that type of time on our hands. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Thomas Primetime Mattis. Many of you may have heard me on other podcasts, and I hope you join me here. And of course, I am here with one of my recently new good friends. I recently met him due to our common friend in Michael Bailey. That's right, Mike. When they come with the torches and pitchforks to come to destroy us, we're just going to say it's your fault so they can go destroy you. My good friend Jesse Garrett.
Hello, and you have not heard me from any other podcast, because I do have a little bit of time on my hands.
You have a life. You have girls, you know, that like you and all those other things.
Hey, girl. If I had girls, I'd be in trouble with her. But
do you want to sort of, to basically introduce why we're sort of doing this podcast? We sort of have to start with how we met each other. Do you want to talk about that a little, Jess?
Let's see.
Well, it was during Michael Bailey's epic 100th episode.
That's right. Yeah. So basically, I mean, green room, much lollygagging going around, and somehow we get on the topic of Godzilla. And we were carrying on our own conversation while everybody else was kind of ignoring us.
Everybody was looking at us like, God.
And that's the thing about Godzilla. It's like, you want to see comic geeks get snooty? Talk about Godzilla. It's like, oh, my men in spandex are better than your guy in rubber suit.
Oh, great. Now Mike and Scott H. Gardner are going to send us emails.
And I did not name anybody in particular. I'm just saying as a generalization.
Oh, that's an episode 13 joke. But, no, yeah, we met in the green room, or as we like to call it, Podcast Con, since everybody in there damn near had a podcast, including Bertoni. Including Bertoni, who had, 23.
Bertoni's on, 18 podcasts.
I think he just started 3 more today, and he's going to start another 4 tomorrow. But, no, we were all in there, and we were talking. No, you, me, I think, Colleen, H. Colton, I can't say his last name, and I apologize, Colleen, if that's how you pronounce it, but yeah, we were the ones really talking about Godzilla, so, and from what I heard from a recent email you sent to another podcast, you were really surprised to find someone that was a big Godzilla fan as much as you were.
Yeah, and well, I think I might have forgot in the email to mention that, yeah, you know, superheroes are, you know, currently a big pop culture thing. You know, everybody's seen the movies, but Godzilla isn't. And it's not looked at as cool by anybody. So, you know, if you find somebody that's interested in it, it's like, oh, wow, they do exist.
Well, you know, to be honest, it doesn't get the respect I think Godzilla deserves. You know, I mean, we'll be honest, yeah, it is kind of B-movie. Because, I mean, it's a guy in a rubber suit, but you know, it's still awesome films. And
yeah, well, people look at the negatives. You know, the crappy. They'll go to the crappiest 50s Godzilla movie you can think of, and then not think back to the original, which had a meaning, had a point, and was a horror film when it came out.
Oh well, yeah, we'll get to that. I mean, and a lot of people think that oh, it's just about against nuclear war. No, it was about war in general. It was an anti-war film. Because, you know, but they call Hiroshima and Nagano, that's what the scenes are supposed to represent. Well, it was also supposed to represent the Tokyo firebombings that happened before the atomic bomb was dropped, and people forget about those. Everybody, when we talk about World War II and attacking Japan, the first thing we talk about is we talk about the atomic bomb, and we forget about, you know, I can't remember their name, but, you know, it was sort of the thing at the end of Pearl Harbor where they were doing the Tokyo firebombings.
Yeah.
And it was like the first planes to launch off a carrier of that size. Did you ever see Pearl Harbor, the Michael Bay film?
I did.
Because you sound like you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, yeah, it's been a long time. And Like, that's actually, that part of the movie was pretty good. Just, you know, the 2 hours before that, too.
You didn't like the attack on Pearl Harbor?
Well, yeah, I like that. But once that happened, the movie got good. Once, you know, I didn't care for Ben Affleck and Josh Hartnett and that chick who was in it. Yeah.
Oh, damn. I had a joke there and I forgot it. Ben Affleck has an Oscar, believe it or not.
For what? Good Hunting, right?
Yeah. You never saw Assume the Position with Robert Wall, did you?
No.
It was an HBO. Robert Wall, he was in the Batman movie. He was a reporter trying to break the Batman story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did HBO special.
Wait, Arliss?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I know him.
Yeah, he did a special called Assume the Position, where it's like the stories that made America and the stories America just made up. It's actually pretty funny. I would try to find it, but back on point, yeah, damn, now I've lost my place. What were...
They don't get respect.
Yeah, I got some respect. Thank you. See, that's why you're here, to keep me on track. But I also think it's because a lot of people miss not seeing, you know, the 90s series or the Millennium series, which are pretty good. You know, they're really good Godzilla films. You know, add to the fact that, you know, Godzilla 2000 was in theaters, but before that, the last Godzilla film that was in movie theaters was Godzilla 1985. And it only gets shown at
a very large gap.
Yeah. And really, and this goes for like all, like Rebirth of Mothra and all these monster films, they only get shown like in art houses. And small theaters like that. And you have to, like,
I'm actually really excited because Godzilla vs. the Sea Monster is playing in the theater in Atlanta this month.
Dude, awesome.
So I'm going to see that. And I believe it's it may be a subtitled version, which I've never seen. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, but like I said, it's obviously not a big theater. It's going to be, you know, one of the revival theaters.
Yeah. I have the VHS of Godzilla vs. the Sea Monster. That's like the only film where the main characters are not either a soldier, reporter, or scientist, which we will get to in a second. You know, some of the common themes in Godzilla. But yeah, you know, that is the thing. You know, if Godzilla had a bigger presence in the theaters, I think there'd be a lot more respect for it. And the thing is, people like Godzilla. They really do. They enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, it's just the problem of, you know, the Heisei series in the 90s. They were very serious films. You know, these weren't you know, Monster Zero with Godzilla dancing. it was serious movies, but they did not reach the large enough audience.
That's one of the best.
That's topped by Godzilla versus Hedorah when he flies backwards using his atomic.
Or Godzilla vs. Megalon, which got on MST3K.
Yes, yeah. If a movie gets on there, you know it's...
Well, yeah. You know what? I'll admit it's a bad film, but it's one of my favorite Godzilla films.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as cheesy as they get, I still enjoy them. And I know we're probably going to get a really critical with these reviews, but once again, it comes from a place of, you know, respect, at least.
Yeah, and we'll get critical. I mean, but at the same time, I think one of the things we're going to do is we're also going to look at, you know what, this was a B movie, and we have to put it in context.
Yeah, they were released a year.
Yeah, I mean, like Godzilla vs. Mothra and Ghidorah the Three-Headed Dragon were all released in the same year. So,
yeah.
And generally they released them like one every year, so. And I think sometimes with the special effects, you have to go, okay, did it look cool? And was it awesome? And I'm sorry, like...
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, obviously from the time frame.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at something like Godzilla vs. Megalon or Godzilla Flying, it looked cool, especially being a child. I mean,
I don't know about you, but I can tell you right now, the two main instances that got me into Godzilla as a whole, you know, and it stuck with me, you know, obviously for 20-something years now. But, you know, as a kid, that's the draw. You know, they're not made, those films especially weren't made for adults. They wanted to see, you know, the visuals, Godzilla flying, Ghidorah attacking the city, you know. Yeah.
Well, you know, and especially in the 70s, Godzilla was really more geared down for kids, and it wasn't until the 90s that he sort of went, I don't want to call him an anti-villain, anti-hero, because he really, really wasn't a hero, because he
became more of a force of nature.
Yeah.
And he was just there. As opposed to, yeah, 70s, he was like savior of the children. Oh no, that was Gamera. But yeah, what? He was, you know, he was teaming up with Jet Jaguar.
But that brings us, right before we move on to our next topic, I have one more question. What was your first Godzilla film? And first
I'm not
100%
certain. I'm not 100% certain because I was so young that they kind of all mished together. But I remember watching them on TNT's Monster Vision with Joe Bob Briggs.
Yes!
And that's my first big exposure to them. And they played three films constantly. Invasion of the Astro Monster, which on there was considered Godzilla vs. Monster Zero, and Godzilla vs. Mothra, and they played Godzilla's Revenge. So I'm assuming it's probably Godzilla vs. Monster Zero. It's the first one I came in contact with. And well, I think that's to this day, that's why I like Rodan. He's one of my favorite characters.
Well, please don't take offense to this. How old are you?
23.
I'm actually older than you. Because I'm 24.
Oh, because, wow.
The thing about it is, that's 24
too much, man. Come on.
But, you know, the thing about it is, that's actually how I got into it, too. I remember, you know, when I used to live with my father in California, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd see Monster Vision on TNT. And the reason I'm asking this is because I don't remember Mothra and what was the... I remember Monster Zero, but... Well, I do remember Godzilla's Revenge, but from later. But, well, excuse me, the three films I remember them showing was Godzilla vs. Monster Zero, Godzilla vs. Megalon, and Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster. Those were my three movies that I remember first seeing. And that's where I fell in love with Godzilla. And you gotta think, yeah, especially with the Smog Monster and Megalon, as cheesy as those are, as a kid... The fight scenes in those movies look awesome. Especially in the Smog Monster, where basically Godzilla is ripping his guts out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as a little kid, that's awesome. And I actually, you know what? I want to say they played Godzilla versus, or no, Terror of Mechagodzilla also. Because I very distinctly remember reenacting that last fight scene with my friends.
I didn't see that.
You're Titanosaurus. You jump over the hill and die. I want to be Titanosaurus. All right, Mechagodzilla.
Dude, but I have to say, one of my favorite Monster Vision memories was 1996, or New Year's 1996, where they had a Godzilla-thon.
Yes, I remember watching that also.
I taped it. I remember my mom taping it for me. And I still have those tapes. And it's really awesome. It's really awesome to go back and watch it to the point where, you know, you get to see all those old commercials. That's why I like recording stuff, because like 10 years later, you get to look at the commercials like, wow, this was stuff that was relevant in 1996. And you get to see like a New York Times ad or an ad for the Wall Street Journal. There was an ad.
Monster Vision had the green logo.
Yeah.
That's before they did drama. They did Monster Movie.
It was TNT Monster Vision New Year's Bash. I remember there was an ad for the TNT miniseries Legends.
You know, that rings a bell.
It was a movie. It was sort of like there was a satanic looking guy, you know, devil looking guy. He had horns, and there was like a centaur. And I was like, in a realm of mystery. Oh, I can't. I'm sure one of our friends listening to this will tell us who was in it and what it was about and help you.
Yes, I'm sure.
But I remember there was like a big deal about that movie, and also commercials, because again, it was on New Year's Eve, so that night, counting down to New Year's Eve, they showed the original Blob. I remember it firmly, and Thunderbirds Are Go.
Wow.
And I remember that as the first time I actually got to see Thunderbirds Are Go, which is the only reason I know about Thunderbirds leading up to that crappy, what was it, 2004 movie? We are really getting off topic, aren't we?
Well, I mean, you can kind of wrap back around TNT, and at least it's only 2 degrees of separation from topic.
Yeah, but yeah. So apparently, we are both children of TNT's Monster yes. Vision. So
Joe Bob Briggs.
I would bring it back.
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
From there, I will go into our next point. We're going to talk a little bit about Godzilla's history and timeline. And to do that, you really have to go into the early days of Japanese cinema. You know, of course, we won World War II. We wouldn't be here if we didn't, but we won World War II. Yay, USA.
We'd be Nazis.
Oh, we're going to get so much letters. But, leading up, Toho had ideas for this giant monster movie. And I have to go through my notes to look for it.
You have notes?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, in the form of something called Wikipedia. But it,
I want to say Toho's first film was in like 35.
Yeah, but leading up to 1954. It was there was a script co-written by who would be the director, Ishiro Honda. Special
great
effects,
name, man.
Yes, and special effects done by Eiji. And I hope I'm saying it. Subaru. I'm probably pronouncing that completely wrong. I'm sure people will correct me. I'm horrible with Japanese pronunciations. At least I tried.
Well, in the on the DVD they say Subaraya. So,
Okay. So, basically, I'm gonna just read the development. It was actually inspired, apparently, by an actual incident, according to Wikipedia. But again, I really should have watched my original Garcia preparation for this. I had so much going on. But basically, you had a combination. There was apparently an incident with a fishing ship called the Lucky Dragon 5. Where it was overwhelmed with a U.S. nuclear bomb test in the Pacific. And they suffered radiation burns and all this. And that gave Ishiro Honda and I'm trying to find the other writer for this. Can't find his name. Well, I really want to find because I really
the writer
also,
other than Honda?
Yeah, other than Honda. I can't remember off the top of my head and I'm trying to find it.
Hold on, I'll get my DVD out and we'll look.
I have my DVD right next to my computer because we both came prepared. All it says.
Hey, what do you know? DVD doesn't list credits.
Yeah. We'll find out at a later date and we'll correct ourselves as horrible people we are. But but that led to them writing this script about this giant monster. You know, again, special effects by Shobo. And what came to be was Gorgia, which was, and it was a hardcore horror movie. I mean, it was really about, it was not only an anti-nuclear bomb movie, which it kind of was, but it was really an anti-war movie, because nobody but the Japanese probably understood the horrors.
Yeah, this is not a movie you're going to take your kids to see.
Yeah, I mean, the original Gorgia movie isn't a true horror movie, and there has not been a giant monster horror movie that has come close to the horror of it since, at least as far as I'm concerned.
No, yeah, I mean, when you watch the scenes of the survivors of the attack, I mean, that's a very clear parallel to World War II.
the haunting chorus scene with the children.
Yes.
God.
And that's one thing you gotta talk about, the music of the film.
Oh.
That everything comes together, and it's, I mean, nowadays horror movies come out and the score is an afterthought. It's whatever band's popular at the time.
It's whatever band, it's, but it's also, it's the same, like, oh, we gotta create suspense. And, you know, these simple things. It's not like with Godzilla where the score of it, which is Akira
Ifukube.
I was really close to remember that. But, you know, his scores throughout all the Godzilla films that he's done, and he's done, I think he went up to...
he went up to Destroyer. Godzilla, he went up to that one.
Oh, if you listen to his scores, God, they're haunting, and they're absolutely fabulous. But, you know, and the scores he did for this film were just... It wouldn't be... Godzilla wouldn't be as good as it was without his scores.
Oh, no, not at all. And, I mean, people talk about, you know, obviously it's a man in a suit, but when you have that kind of score, it counteracts that. It lets you get deeper into the film.
Yeah. And so they made this film, and it was a big hit. It was brought over to America. They inserted scenes of Raymond Burr as Steve Martin, which you say, well, there's this guy named Steve Martin. A lot of people are going to start thinking of a different person.
The jerk?
Yeah. Oh, thank you for making that joke. They introduced, and they cut out scenes. A lot of the scenes were scenes, like, there was a train scene in the original that was cut out, where they were sort of talking about America. And actually, that was cut out by the Japanese when they brought it over to America, because one of the things Honda didn't want to do is he didn't want to offend America. And thinking,
yeah, and they were kept for that with all of the
films.
Films, yeah. And they were very forgiving, very careful, yeah, with all the translations. They wanted them to come to America, very much so.
Well, it's not even so much that I think that they worried about that they were being anti-American. They wanted to be focused on, this is about anti-war. This is for, against all nations that think that war is a good idea. And a sort of, or is a general good idea. I mean, you get what I'm saying. I mean, it's one thing to defend ourselves like we did with Afghanistan, but to constantly go to just war just because you hate somebody or whatever. You know, war is this terrible, horrible thing, and we should always remember that. And that's what
That's you know, when you boil it down, that's the message of the film right there.
Yeah.
And that's a universal for, you know, everybody. That's not necessarily anti-American, anti-anything. It's just what it is. No one should want the war.
So just to finish off this point, since we're 24 minutes in, to break the fourth wall, I'm now going to go down a timeline list of the films. Of course, in 1954, you had Gorgia, which is the original Japanese title, which was far over here as Godzilla King of the Monsters. You then had Godzilla Raids Again, which was in 1955, far over here as Gigantus the Fire Monster. They then made a movie. They then started to experiment with new monsters. That's where you got Rodan and Mothra. And you got another movie called Von the Unbelievable, which is
Von.
He was sort of like the snake-like dragon-type monster, if I'm remembering.
And he actually was in Destroy All Monsters.
Yeah,
he didn't do anything in the film, but he was there.
He's also in Godzilla Final Wars in like the beginning scenes.
Yeah, he's in stock footage, yeah. Let's see, Rodan came out in 56.
Mothra, I think...
And Varan came out in
58. 58. In America, it was world, but it's just Varan. Mothra...
Mothra came out in 61.
61? And after that, they then went back to Godzilla. And they came out in 1962 with King Kong versus Godzilla, which was a big hit. It was actually originally supposed to be King Kong versus Frankenstein, but apparently Frankenstein wasn't a big enough draw or whatever, and they threw Godzilla in there. And you can tell this by the fact that King Kong is, you know, powered up by electricity.
Yeah. And even on an interesting side note, you know, they were originally, I think they wanted to do the film at stop motion.
Yeah.
And I believe the Tsuburaya, he said he was a big fan of King Kong, and he even wanted to, you know, do the original Gojira. He considered doing it in stop motion. There's some film available of that.
Well, there is a little stop motion. Well, there's some stop motion in Godzilla Rage Again, and I do believe there's some stop motion in King Kong versus Godzilla. And when we get to that, we'll talk about that, because it really does stand out from the scenes where there's a man in the suit.
Yeah, it's a very, very different technique. Yeah. But I know one of the things about that film is, just to clarify now, no, there are not two endings to it.
Yeah. And I remember, because when I was a child, I got this book. I can't remember the name of the company, but they had this long release of, like, books about famous movie monsters like Frankenstein and Dracula. It had, like, orange on the cover. I still have it somewhere. I'd have to go find it. But it had one about Godzilla. And in the book, it said there were two endings for the two different, you know, one King Kong won, one where Godzilla won. And I remember that for the longest time. And it wasn't until very recently with the Angry Video Game Nerd where I recently learned about that. That was then followed by Mothra vs. Godzilla in 1964, also known as Godzilla vs. The Thing, also known as Godzilla vs. Mothra, because the original title was Mothra vs. Godzilla. Just because I said that twice and I'm an idiot. Also in 1964 was Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster.
Also known as Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster.
No, the original title was Ghidorah, and then you had Ghidra the Three-Headed Monster. That was the English title. You then had Invasion of the Astro Monster, also known as Monster Zero, also known as Godzilla vs. Monster Zero, which was released in 1985, and the first instance of how disco was taking effect, because you had Godzilla dancing.
Yes. Yes. Also that year was Frankenstein versus Baragon, also known as Frankenstein Conquers the World. Not exactly a Godzilla film, but it does kind of tie in the future.
It does. We'll get to that in a little bit, actually. That was then followed in 1966 with Godzilla versus the Sea Monster, also known as Ibra Horror of the Deep.
Which I'll be going to see later this month.
That was then followed by The Son of Godzilla in 1967, which I have a funny little story about that. I remember I rented that like about 10 years ago from Blockbuster, and I watched it, and my mom denies this. This is how big of a Godzilla fan. We had three cats, and the third one I got to name, and it was like an all-black cat, and I was so big of a Godzilla fan that I wanted to name it Minya.
We should name it Gabara.
So I named it Minya. So my mom, she firmly denies ever doing this, but she remembers pulling the cat would like just lay on the floor, and she remembers pulling it by the tail, just like Godzilla did his son. I mean, she didn't torture the cat, but she saw it was like.
I remember very much liking that film as a young guy, because it had no humans in it hardly. I was like, man, this is awesome.
That may have been another movie you're thinking about, but I just want, my mom does not torture cats. My mom loves her cats. My mom does not torture her cats, so please do not seek PETA on us, please. In 1968, to get it with an awkward moment, Destroy All Monsters came out, which is such an interesting movie, because, you know, at that point, they had all these monsters they created, and they didn't know what to do with them, so they just said, hey, let's just have a big monster mash.
I believe it works better than Godzilla Final Wars.
Ooh. Well,
I like that film. I like that film a lot. And I respect what it is, but I think they did it better there. But anyway.
We'll get to that later. All Out Monsters Attack in 1969, also known as Godzilla's Revenge, where basically I can't imagine he goes to Monster Island to learn how to fight bullies. That's the basis of the movie. In 1971, we had Godzilla.
Wait! I thought that was Son of Godzilla.
No, that Godzilla's Revenge was All Out Monsters Attack, and it was a different movie. It was where basically that little boy whose grandfather's a toy inventor.
Yeah, I thought that was Son of Godzilla. That's the one where he daydreams the whole thing. I thought that was Son of Godzilla.
Son of Godzilla is where they're on an island, and they're like, these scientists are investigating something, and it's basically created those. It's where a lot of stock footage comes from for Godzilla.
Yeah, with the what are they Commandos, giant mantis?
Yeah, the giant mantises. But no, Son of Godzilla was a different movie. It shows the birth of Godzilla, you know, of Godzilla's son Minya in an egg. He doesn't talk at all. I mean, again, that's where the dragon of the tail comes, and you know, this whole thing of him trying to learn how to breathe, and that all comes from that. We'll get to that.
Maybe I haven't seen that film. Wow, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
Again, Godzilla vs. Hedorah in 1971, also known as Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster, also known as Godzilla Wants You to Save the Earth and Not Pollute.
Be the evil problem around us.
Yes, go green. I really like that film. I do.
It was so funny. They could remake it now and be so relevant, especially with what's going on now. But that's besides the point. We're not going to get political. I'm not out.
No, not at all.
That was followed by Godzilla vs. Gigan, 1972. Also known as Godzilla on Monster Island. It's also the first point where Godzilla actually speaks English. You know, he went to some night classes and, you know, learned how to
went to some ESL, you know.
Maybe. Yeah. You then had Godzilla vs. Megalon, 1973, which had...
Jet Jaguar.
Great, now I have to play the clip again. That was then followed in 1974 by Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, also known as Godzilla vs. the Cosmic Monster, also known as Godzilla vs. the Bionic Monster, to catch in on the, you know, Bionic Man, and I think the...
And I believe they had to change the title because they were going to get sued for using Bionic.
Yeah.
I think that's where the Cosmic Monster came from.
Yeah. You then had Terror of Mechagodzilla in 1975, which was also titled in English Terror of Godzilla.
What? Which I want to say that's probably my favorite film.
Yeah. You then had Return of Godzilla in 1984. You had about a 10-year absence, really about 9. Brought over here in America a year later as Godzilla 1985, and it was one of the first in a long time to be featured in theaters.
With Raymond Burr reprising his role as Steve Martin.
The jerk? Sorry. Godzilla vs. Biota? Or Bolita? Oh, how did you say it earlier?
Biollante.
Biollante, thank you. Again, they're Japanese pronunciations. I have problems. Hell, I have problems saying English. So how do you think I'm going to say Japanese? But that's besides the point.
Now, when we get the character names, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah in 1991.
Another very good.
Biota was also, by the way, was 1989, so King Ghidorah was 1991. The English name was basically the same. Then you had Godzilla vs. Mothra in 1992, also known as Godzilla and Mothra Battle for the Earth, and featured a new monster, Batra. You then had Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2, 1993. Probably Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 3, but besides the point, features Fire Rodan and the birth.
Although the two kind of throws it off because it's not a sequel to that original film.
Yeah. Starting with Godzilla 1985, they really, to go back, all the other films except for the original 1954 didn't happen. It was like a new continuality.
Yeah, it's the start of the Heisei series.
Yes. And what happened in the 70s and 60s is known as the Showa series. But after American Godzilla 2, you had Godzilla vs. Space Godzilla 1994, which I right now have my Space Godzilla figure looking over my computer.
Is it one of the figures that came out like the early to mid-90s?
Yeah, it was like that series.
Yeah, I love those. I had a ton of them. I don't know what happened.
I remember I had got them like all for Hanukkah, and I had Rodan and Mothra and Matra, and I had all of them. And I had a sort of Cyber Godzilla where he had like the armor equipment.
Oh yes, I think I had Cyber Rodan.
God, I gotta go find those figures now.
It sounds like as if a giant monster wasn't enough. You know what?
We're just gonna give him weapons.
Big missile and shit.
Godzilla vs. Space Godzilla was followed by Godzilla versus the Historia in 1995. Also, apparently just given the English title of Godzilla versus Destroyer.
Destroyer is too hard for Americans to pronounce.
They could say Destroyer. We then, in 1998, had our American Godzilla movie. And then we're just going to walk away.
Also known as Godzilla versus Ferris Bueller.
I can't even follow up that joke. Damn. but then the Japanese came back in 1999 with Godzilla 2000 Millennium. Also brought over there, just Godzilla versus 2000. And they showed us how it's really done.
Yeah. And they rebooted the series again with that film.
Yeah. Again, with Godzilla 2000. All the films happened in the 90s series and the 70s and 60s didn't happen except for Godzilla 1954.
And every film in the series, the Millennium series, basically has its own continuity except for TOSOS.
Every film in the Millennium series basically it eliminates. The only other film that happened was Godzilla 1954. The other films that happened before it didn't happen.
I preferred the tighter continuity of the Heisei series, but I mean, it's all good.
You then had Godzilla versus Mechagirus in 2000, which was a giant dragonfly. You then had Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, giant monsters all out attack in 2001. And in this one, Godzilla purely was a villain.
This new Godzilla is unfriendly, and he's going to destroy your country. There's nothing you can do about it.
And they went back to the old Godzilla design from the 1954 film.
Yeah, very awesome design. He had no pupils. He looked like a dragon.
Yeah.
And Ghidorah was a good guy, which is very odd.
It was very a little disturbing, too. I'm like, I don't want to say you're wrecking my childhood, but I'm very scared right now.
Yeah, I don't root for King Ghidorah. This doesn't happen.
You then had Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla in 2002, which was then followed by really the only sequel in the series, which was Godzilla Tokyo SOS in 2003. And then in 2004, for the 60th anniversary, you had Godzilla Final Wars, which I enjoy.
Yeah, it's an enjoyable movie. It really is. There's faults with it, yes, but it was basically a giant love letter to all the fans.
Yeah.
And a big hoorah to go out in a bang, because they are currently on a hiatus.
Yeah. And unlike the 90s series where they had Godzilla die, they had Godzilla, go off into the sunset, which I kind of like that better than what happened at the end of the 90s series in the Historia.
Yeah, I mean, because you spend this whole time basically proving he's invulnerable and he's top dog, and then you kind of have him job to destroy him, but, we'll get into that later down the road. But,
yeah.
It was an enjoyable film.
Yeah. I like that, they didn't even say, the English martial arts MMA guy who was the captain in there says, we know you're not going to be able to say Japanese, so just say English.
Yeah. And everybody will know what you're saying.
But, yeah, of course, I think everybody's favorite clip from that film is one clip. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, when he defeats, he proves he's stronger than Matthew Broderick and kills the Godzilla in...
He destroyed
36 seconds or something like that.
Yeah. Where Godzilla destroys Zilla from the 1998 film.
Yeah, in one move.
Yeah, he hits him with his tail and it gives him fire breath. Like, F you.
And then proceeds on his way.
Yeah, I'll try not to curse because there might be kids. We never know. We're gonna have to watch and see if there's kids listening. But besides the point. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about the cultural impact of Godzilla and its importance in film. What do you feel his cultural impact and importance is?
Well, in film or anything in general, because, in video games today, children's shows, anytime you see a large monster, it's almost directly influenced by Godzilla. I mean, even, my little nephew knows who he is. He's 5 years old. There hasn't been a Godzilla film released since he's been born. He knows.
Oh, even the bad ones. Power Girl #4 sort of parodied and referenced the 98 Godzilla.
Did it? I don't read Power Girl.
Oh, you didn't read? Basically, Big Stomp, and there's there's this bus driving, and this giant foot comes down, and the bus runs into the foot, and then it goes to a fish market, and it kind of, he doesn't look like himself, but it's like a giant dinosaur. So yeah, it was bar none, it was referencing Godzilla 1998. And he's befounded by this.
I'm just like, wow. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing, you know, you see the influence everywhere.
Yeah.
And I mean, even you know, we had Cloverfield, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah.
You can't tell me that movie is not influenced by it.
Oh, yeah. You know what? J.J. Abrams said it flat out. I wanted to create an American Godzilla. Like, not like an American version of Godzilla, but I wanted to give America its own version of Godzilla. To which I said, isn't that called King Kong? But that's besides the point. But, you know, the thing is, you know, he wanted to create a monster that was, you know, had the sort of same impact in our culture as Godzilla does in Japan, because he went over to Japan and he saw how big Godzilla is over there.
Yeah, I don't think he succeeded, only because the film wasn't from, you know, the film didn't focus on the monster as much as Godzilla films do.
As a horror film, it was very, very interesting. And
I enjoyed the movie, but yeah, I mean,
as a giant monster movie, it was more like a Universal Studios ride.
Yes. And I remember going to the theater to see it, and they were telling people, you know, if you get motion sick, don't see this movie.
But, you know, and if you need any proof of this, just quickly scan to the ending where they get onto the helicopter and they're trying to escape, and you're overlooking the monster destroying New York.
Oh, yeah.
And he, like, pops out. I'm like, this is like a 3D ride I'm on. When's Michael Jackson going to pop out now?
Or Jaws.
But, yeah, Godzilla, he has his own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. That's how big he is, and not just Japanese culture, but our culture. Again, it's one of those fandoms I think so many people really are a fan of. It's not even recognized being a fan of Godzilla. You have G-Fest in Chicago, which is, I think, the world's biggest Godzilla or a kaiju convention. I mean, you look at things like Kaiju Big Battle, obviously influenced by Godzilla and all the kaiju films like Gamera and Mothra. Did you ever see Kaiju Big Battle?
I did not.
Kaiju Big Battle, it's basically sort of like wrestling, but they dress up in like monster costumes. As nice. They're performing wrestling, but they're like in a steel cage, and they have these little paper buildings in the ring. As they're like destroying the city while they fight each other. And they have the, and it's all for fun. It's ridiculous names like Kung Fu Chicken Noodle Soup. And it's a guy in a chicken noodle soup can performing kung fu moves. A Robox, which is like this, like, he looks like those type of robots you would build as a kid that's like out of cardboard boxes.
Yeah, but like the ones that are square and can't move at all.
Yeah. Dressed up like that. I'll have to show you some YouTube clips of it. I mean, Godzilla even got an MTV Lifetime Achievement Award in 1996, which is more than I can say for the Oscars!
Yeah.
Basically, the entire giant monster film genre can be contributed to him.
Yeah, I mean, he started it. I mean, obviously, King Kong and the other Godzilla owes King Kong a lot of influence, but King Kong didn't, you know, he wasn't about destroying cities. And when you have that image of the monster going piling through buildings and obviously, you know, the giant monster toppling skyscrapers, that's what comes to mind.
I mean, when you think of giant monsters, one of the things you think of Godzilla because, you know, think of the indestructibility. Those films of the early 20s and 30s, you know, with King Kong, you know, they were vulnerable to, you know, human weapons. They weren't invulnerable. They could, you know, King Kong was taken down by freaking biplanes.
Yeah.
If a biplane went up from Godzilla, Godzilla would grab it and go, tastes like chicken.
Yeah, I don't think there's a single movie where any Godzilla movie where human weapons actually work. As in conventional planes, tanks. No.
And because of his cultural impact, he's had like many, so, you know, there were Zone Fighters, which was a sort of Toho's response to like Ultraman that had Godzilla guest starring a lot of times. You know, Gigan and King Ghidorah were villains a lot. You had the 1978 Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Which I actually like, as bad as it is.
Oh, I like it too. I actually have
the Godzuki and that guy that looks like Captain Riker from Star Trek.
I actually have the theme. Even the American Godzilla cartoon series is very good. It's actually better than the film, sadly.
Yeah, well, they gave him an atomic breath weapon, which was a big start.
You had the comic books from Marvel in the 70s and Dark Horse in the 80s and 90s.
You know, I want to read those. I've read one or two of the Dark Horse. I have not read any of the Marvel.
I've not seen any of the Dark Horse. I've read a couple of the Marvel. I don't want to say I burned through it, but I like went through a couple of chapters when I saw the omnibus. It's like a paperback omnibus of Marvel Legends at a comic shop that I go to. So, we're now going to go into individual and talk about the individual periods and what we like about it. We're going to start off, do you want to start off talking about the original film first? I think we've talked about it.
Yeah, well, we talked about it, and we are going to do a review over it. So, because the show series really starts with Godzilla Rage Again.
Yeah. So you want to start off talking about the Showa era and the things you like? Start off with music, then acting and story. I mean, music wise, Akira Ubute, his music made the entire Godzilla series. Part of the reason he's popular.
Oh yeah, yeah, and I mean that his music's used through all of the series, but that's used to give a gravitas, I guess, to even the most ridiculous situations. You got four or five guys in suits beating up each other, but the music, it almost tricks you into extending your disbelief into it. You get able to delve deeper into the movie because of that, because the music never takes itself as a joke. It always treats itself very seriously.
It's very, and I could hum any theme and we'll just stand there like da 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 da.
I have that as a theme.
But like, you can hum that and people will know what you're talking about.
Yeah, people who don't even know they know it. Like, oh hey, it's got you need that.
It's kind of like Final Fantasy. You play the Final Fantasy Victory Fanfare. Da, 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 da. People who don't even play video games will somehow know, oh, that's Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Awkward silence. You gotta love it. You hate Final Fantasy?
No. Heck no. I'm waiting for 13 very much so.
I had pre-ordered. I have my collector's edition of the strategy guide pre-ordered too, and I'm picking them both up on Tuesday.
Yeah, I was thumbing through the strategy guide because at work we get stuff a little early, and I was like looking through it like, man, this looks awesome.
Our first Final Fantasy sequel since Final Fantasy X, because X-2 was really a sequel to X, 11 was a multi-online player game, and 12 was a sellout to World of Warcraft fans. But we're getting off topic.
God, I hated 12.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But the acting was really good. Of the films I remember, we're going to go back and watch them, but films I remember, God, it was a thing of, I never saw the acting as cheesy.
No, and I think a lot of people's opinion is obviously colored by dubbing. And I don't hate dubbing like as much as most people do, because it's there for a reason. And I watch the films dubbed if, I'm tired or don't feel like reading. But yeah, that, that should not be representative of the original, Japanese actors.
I mean, the acting was great. I mean, the dubbing, and it's early dubbing. I mean, it's not like the dubbing we have now for films when we get Japanese films brought over here or anime, where, you have very serious, classically trained theater actors doing the performances, and they have tryouts and things, and they work their hardest to try to make it look like, oh man, she's actually speaking English. And it sounds right. It was early dubbing. And I don't think you can fault that. And sometimes it brings a whole new dynamic to the film. There are certain films, you'll watch them, I can watch it seriously in Japanese, and then I can watch it as a comedy in English, like King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah, that will.
where you have the guy who he sends the main actor to go find King Kong. He's like, I am sick of Godzilla. No more Godzilla. Sorry, I was so into that impression that I almost knocked my headset off. Sick of Godzilla. I want a new attraction.
Yeah, which that's one of the rare times they actually, one of the actors does a fake Japanese accent.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen that often. But that one, it's like, wow, that's very stereotypical.
And the stories, you know, the stories for what they were, yeah, it's a B-movie plot, but, I mean, outside, before you get into the 70s, after Destroy All Monsters, from Rage Again to Destroy All Monsters, they're actually very good plots and very engaging. And, you know, one of the things we'll talk about is, throughout the Godzilla series, the main characters are always either one of, at the very least, they're one of three type of characters. They're either a soldier, a scientist, and a reporter. I mean,
I think the soldier's definitely third, because 9 times out of 10, they're a reporter or a scientist.
I mean, like Godzilla versus Monster Zero, they're sort of scientists and soldiers, being that they're astronauts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they had to come from training to command the ship, and they're also scientists. I mean, but, you know, you look at the original. The three main characters were, especially both the American, I mean, not so much in the Japanese version where the reporters were on the back end, but if you include the American version, you have the Steve Burr was the reporter, the scientist the two scientists and the young girls.
Raymond Burr.
Yeah, well, not Raymond Burr, but I'm talking about the scientists. The guy who created the Ashton Destroyer.
Shirazawa, yeah.
Again, we're having a problem with Japanese names. And his fiance's father was also a scientist, was a head scientist looking over Godzilla. And then you had his fiance's lover, or should I say the person she loved, which is something that doesn't get talked about in the Godzilla film. I'll talk about it real quickly, but you know, he was a soldier. And so those were the main characters. And he was throughout the film a lot. Now, again, like I just said, if you really watch the original film, there was a love story going on between the main female actress. You know, she was engaged to marry Dr. Shirazawa in an arranged marriage, but she really loved this military person, and her father was against her marrying him. And so it was this thing of, not only was Shirazawa, when he kills himself at the end by, again, we'll get into this when we review the movie. But when he kills himself at the end because he wants to prevent people from getting the plans for the Oxygen Destroyer,
it's a twofold. He almost sacrifices himself for her.
He sacrifices for her. He's, you know, he knows that she loves him, and so, you know, I'm not going to force. So to an extent, he's also, you know, showing how much he loves her by sacrificing himself and not forcing her into that thing of trying to pick between two people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very deep love triangle, especially, you know, if you think of it as a Godzilla movie. You don't expect the films to have these subplots.
And people don't even realize that a lot of times.
Yeah, it's just the humans running around waiting for the monsters to appear.
Yeah. Again, and then you, to finish off stories for this era, you then get into like Son of Godzilla and on, where it's basically something happens, and we need to call Godzilla to come help us and defeat the giant monster.
He goes from being, point A, he's a bad guy. He slowly goes from being, well, the lesser of two evils to a flat-out hero of children and people, innocent people. And Godzilla versus Hedorah, he's a good guy. They call upon him to help.
Yeah.
He defeats the evil Smog monster.
I mean, there was no doubt at this point they were making it for kids. So, again, at 1975, you had Terra Mechagodzilla, which was the last of the Showa era. And in 1984, you had the Godzilla's Return, also known as Godzilla 1985, which started the Henshi era. Music-wise, it was different music, but again, I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. It definitely fit the theme for what the film was going for.
Yeah, I mean, definitely more darker tones, music-wise, with the films. And at the same point, you also heard tendencies from old tunes from the Showa series and the Henshi series.
especially when they started bringing back some of the older monsters.
Yeah. And, I mean...
Or, I guess, reinventing them.
Yeah. The acting, I think the acting got a bit of a notch up, because, it had more funding for the movies. There was better special effects, I think we can say, at the very least.
Yes. I think it's sad that most people don't even know those films exist, because they're very different than the Showa, than the Godzilla vs. Megalon and the campier 70s and 60s films.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely went away from the campy and went back towards the more serious type of storyline. That is, until you get to Mechagodzilla 2 and the birth of Minya. Every time Minya...
Well, even Minya in that film, if you can call him, I guess, I don't know if they ever call him that, but he's nowhere near as goofy as he was portrayed in the originals.
I mean, you know, the thing about it, you know, actually in Mechagodzilla, he sort of looks like a dinosaur. In Space Godzilla, he looks more like Minya, and then in the Destroya, he actually somewhat looks like Godzilla, and the fact that he's sort of grown up.
Yeah.
And he actually fights monsters.
Which Minya never really did. He didn't do a whole lot of anything besides blow smoke rings.
I mean, and I thought there was a lot of interesting ideas in Space Godzilla, which had two origin stories. One was the cells of Violente somehow went up into space, I don't know how, and went into a black hole and created him. And the other one was that Godzilla cells got stuck on Mothra when she went to space and, I guess, got into a black hole and created him.
It was like, take your pick.
We don't know which one.
I like Space Godzilla. The only thing is, by that point, it was followed Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, so by that point you did have two films where Godzilla pretty much fought an evil version of himself.
Yeah. But I thought Space Godzilla was cool. And then you had the Destroya, which again, it was a very interesting idea to use the Archean Destroyer as the basis for how this monster was created. The machine that was used to kill the original Godzilla now created this new monster that needs to be destroyed, and it sort of fits the theme of anti-war. We create these weapons for war, and we have no idea of their impact on not only on humans, but on nature. And this shows that.
It says a lot to the anti-war, anti-nuclear, you know, or nuclear, as they say in the South here.
We're both,
you know, anti-war, anti-nuclear themes of the films.
Yeah. We're going to apologize again right now, and this will be the last time, for our pronunciations, not only in Japanese, but English, because we're both from the South.
Yeah.
You know.
So, here are y'all.
Yeah.
Y'all
come right back now, you hear? We're going to get more letters. After then, because I think we just covered acting and story, sort of, unconsciously.
Yeah, kind of.
That leads into the Millennium series. Now, with the Millennium series, I was about to go into the story and skip everything, but actually, before we go into the Millennium series, something a little different happened. A 1998 Godzilla movie happened. Ron Kurtzman, creator of Independence Day. And you know what? I like it. You know, after 10 years of letting the venom subside.
It's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not a Godzilla movie.
You know what? It was a love story to the 1954 Godzilla movie. Its fatal flaw, though, was that it tried to explain Godzilla scientifically, and you just can't do that. You know?
Yeah, in the 54 version and in the later versions, they hint at it.
Yeah.
They hint at a scientific kind of origin, but they also tell you that Godzilla, you know, he's the essence of everyone who's died in the war and died.
Well, that was giant all monsters attack.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, in the Showa era, it was, you know, the origin story was he was this giant monster under the sea and nuclear test mutated him. And
yeah, they don't delve into it any more than that.
In the Henshi series, they basically explained that there was this dinosaur called Godzillasaurus. And there was this living, breathing one that was still alive during World War II in it. And they explained this in Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah.
Yeah, which I actually just watched last night. Yes. It's still a little confusing.
But no, basically, he saved these Japanese soldiers and scared away the Americans, so they called in a nuclear strike, and I guess they dropped a nuclear bomb on him, or it was from the testing or whatever. And that created Godzilla. Basically saying that the French nuclear test mutated a marine iguana, which is what the species is. It's a marine iguana.
Yeah. You know, I was trying to remember earlier if it was a marine iguana or like Komodo dragon. Because at least a Komodo dragon is a little more intimidating.
Yeah, but a Komodo dragon is in Indonesia. So it was a marine iguana. It was smaller than a Komodo dragon. More importantly, I mean, Komodo dragons can swim, but they don't do sort of the things that they were showing those lizards doing. And then the whole, I mean, you get that, and then the whole, you don't have the atomic breath. You don't have the indestructibility, which hurt it. Again,
yeah, I mean, it was really more of a King Kong movie.
Yeah. I mean, again, and I wouldn't have a problem with him being destroyed by missiles on the bridge if, you know, they were special missiles and the tanks weren't hurting them. They try to get around it by saying, well, he's smart, so he can dodge bullets and all this stuff. I'm like, Godzilla shouldn't have to dodge bullets or tank fire.
Yeah, and it's not just like a fanboy wanting, you know, to power up his favorite character. That's one of the
tribute.
Sort of the motifs behind the character is that it's supposed to be hopeless, you know. He's supposed to be impervious, and that's...
He's indestructible, and he has atomic breath.
It's like making Superman, you know, bleed all the time.
Yeah. And then the third thing is the asexual thing. You know, the joke was funny. Yeah, where's the fun in that? But at the same point in time, I don't think they ripped off Jurassic Park. I don't feel they did. But it was a thing of, you know, it kind of stopped the film. That was the final straw that kind of stopped the film. I mean, I still enjoy it. Because if you really watch it, a lot of the motifs that are from the original 1954 Godzilla film are in there. You know, again, the soldier, the reporter, the scientist, and Matthew Broderick, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Hank Azaria, and John Reno. And even the supporting characters, as I have to readjust my headset. you know, again, it's scientists, soldiers, and reporters.
Yeah, it's definitely a more well-made film than a lot of the remakes we're getting nowadays.
Yeah.
And it's definitely handled with a lot more care, you could tell.
Yeah. But from there, we'll go into the Millennium series. As we talk, again, one of my things that I don't like is actually that they again, over and over again, started off with a new story that all the other movies didn't happen. I actually didn't like that.
Me either. And that's one of the things I liked about the Heisei series is that every film continued the story.
Yeah.
And they had a very tight continuity. Films, you know, they influenced each other. But in this series, everyone's a direct sequel to Godzilla 1954. So you can't have growth or any kind of referencing the past events.
And it would have been okay in Godzilla 2000, but they didn't continue it. But as far as music is concerned, I felt they went to a more of a military type theme. I don't know if you've caught that. I mean,
it sounded more industrial or more.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't in Godzilla Final Wars because that was a different thing altogether. But you know, from Godzilla 2000.
Well, Godzilla Final Wars is a Showa film. I don't care what you say.
But you know, Godzilla 2000 to Tokyo SOS, Godzilla, Mechagodzilla, and Mothra, you know, it was industrial, but it sort of had this military theme, which sort of matched this sort of theming, because if you really watch all the films, it's really about the military, you know, rising up and being able to defeat Godzilla, because, you know, every film, well, not Godzilla 2000, but in Megaguirus, it's the black hole generator. In Dino Monsters Attack, it's the drill missile that drills to the heart. And in the two Mechagodzilla films, it's, you know, the Mechagodzilla. which is made out of the bones of the original Godzilla.
Which I liked. I thought it was a very good idea. Very interesting. Once again, goes back to the motifs from the original.
Is it wrong if I say that the pilot in Godzilla vs. Well, you haven't seen it, so you don't know who I'm talking about, but there's a female... the pilot of Mechagodzilla in Godzilla X Mechagodzilla is a female. Is it wrong for me to say she's hot?
Is she the same one that pilots it in Tokyo SOS?
No, but I think she makes a cameo appearance. I think she's part of that team that's going off to America.
But well, no, she's probably hot because lots of Asian chicks are hot.
Show where our interest levels are. Yeah. But that really leads to the acting, which, again, it's really, the acting, again, went up a notch. And the stories, I kind of felt, went up a notch.
Yeah, I mean, they were more self-contained, so...
I mean, they definitely got creative, at least I feel.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that, I guess, Megaguirus was the only, really the only new creation of that series. That and, I guess, Orga from Godzilla 2000, but...
Yeah, well, we'll talk about some of the monsters I wish they would fight when we get into others, so... But...
Hey, I think we should do a kind of what you hope or what you'd like to see.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that second because I really want, again, want to go to Godzilla Final Wars, which, again, you said it was a Showa era movie. But, again, it was that thing of, it was just awesome. You know, the match between Godzilla and Zilla or Gina, Godzilla in name only, as he's sometimes called, was awesome. The sort of the handicap match. Where you had King Caesar,
that's my favorite in the movie,
and Rodan. And, you know, the thing about it is, there was obviously a joke where, you know, Angerus, he's in his ball mode, Caesar kicks him, and they sort of mock soccer a little bit, because he's not diving out of the way, he's trying to stop it.
And then I think, doesn't Godzilla, like, volley it back at him?
Well, he hollers it back, then he kicks it. And then Godzilla tries to save it like a goalie. I mean, there's no beef about it, because it's going wide. There's no reason for him to jump out of the way, but he jumps towards it. Like, he's trying to stop it.
But see, that's what I mean when it's a Showa film, because it obviously had those, you know, those
influences,
humorous
moments. Yeah.
Which I think you should have those in a Godzilla movie. They add to it, but...
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have those in the Millennium series, or even the Heisei series.
I mean, I like sort of, again, I'm going to reference the angry video game nerd, his Godzilla-thon, which you can find on YouTube. You really should check it out. He sort of says Godzilla goes through that film like a slasher, and just, like, kills monster after monster. It's pretty awesome. Like,
Hedorah is in there for all of maybe 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And he gave him a pretty good fight in his movie, so it's like, yeah.
You know, he slams against a skyscraper and then puts Ibra into his eye, which again...
And I guess it kind of worked around it with the Rodan, Angerus, and King Caesar fight. They all teamed up on him. And
the only monster that wasn't controlled other than Godzilla was Mothra, who comes later to help him.
Yeah, I like that, but I'm not the biggest fan of Mothra.
Like them, but you have Gigan's redesign, which I thought was awesome. Both of them, because you sort of had the traditional scythe type of one, and then you had the chainsaw wielding Gigan, which was freaking awesome.
It's like, how to make a character cooler? Nah, give him chainsaws on the arm. He's worked for Evil Dead.
I mean, you could tell that because the director did this. I think he was influenced by Evil Dead in the sense that he did a movie called Versus,
didn't he?
Yeah.
Which is very clearly an homage to Sam Raimi.
Yeah. I mean, it's a samurai film, but with zombies and everything, but it's very clearly. He also did another movie called Cube, and then you have Monster X, and it was just so great, you know, that battle between him and Godzilla, and then it gets to the point, and then it's like, final stand, and he transforms into King Ghidorah, and it's like, you know what, everything's right, because it has to be King Ghidorah. There's no other monster that Godzilla's final fight really should be against than King Ghidorah.
Yeah, I mean, King Ghidorah is arguably the, you know, the biggest one.
Well, let's face it. When we think about Godzilla villains, the top of the list has to be King Ghidorah. It's the one everybody knows about.
And it's the one that takes him
to his limit.
Yeah, exactly. Every film he's been in, or not every film, but most of the films he's been in, he's had to have help to beat him.
Yeah.
Short of Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah in 91, and that film, Final Wars, he's had to have Mothra and Rodan or Anguirus.
Well, you can't forget Giant All Monsters Attack, where Godzilla was the more powerful one.
Well, true, yes. But that's not really King Ghidorah, that's...
Yeah. Moving on, so that's basically what we think of the series. So we're going to go into other Godzilla things that we've seen. You know, again, we talked about the cartoon, the Hanna-Barbera cartoon, which was awesome.
With Godzuki.
Godzuki, da 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 da
da da
da da.
That dude looks just like him, I'm sorry. With the little like Godzilla thing he had on his belt to call him.
Yeah. You had, and we talked about the cartoon based off the 98 Godzilla. You had Zone Fighters, which was, again, like I think we said earlier, was Toho's answer to Ultraman and Toji Hino genre. And it guest starred Godzilla a lot of times and had Gigan and King Ghidorah show up. I recently found this thing that was created in 97 by the Japanese called Godzilla Island, where instead of using guys in suits, they use like Godzilla action figures.
Almost like stop motion?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So you've had books again and all that stuff. And of course, being that we're fans of Godzilla, we're also fans of other monsters like Mothra. Mothra had a 3-film series in the 90s called Rebirth of Mothra.
Which I've heard is very good. I'm planning on picking that up.
Well, in the first film, he fights a sort of a version of Ghidorah called Dehegodora.
Yeah.
I think it's like a 6-headed dragon or something like that. But it's more like the Ghidorah basically in Final Wars where... Kaiser Ghidorah, where, you know, he's like, he actually has 4 legs instead of just standing on 2.
Yeah.
That's what it's kind of like. Then you have, in the second film, he fights like this sort of sea monster. And I can't remember who he fights in the 3rd film. So, and then, of course, you have Gamera, which is Japanese other famous movie monster.
Yeah, probably the second most famous monster. It's, as in obviously not Rodan, Mothra, and that he's in his own universe.
Well, Mothra's probably the 3rd most famous, but Gamera, yeah. And Gamera had movies from the 60s and 70s. He had a Rebirth in the 90s too. He had 3 movies. Gamera.
Garden of Universe.
You haven't seen it?
No, they were very good.
Oh, okay. And then you had the second one where he sort of fighted insects, and we'll talk about the second one in a second again. And the 3rd one, I actually haven't seen the 3rd one yet, but the second one, they actually ADV, the company that did the dub, parried it and did a movie called Redneck Gamera, which if you ever get to see it, it's absolutely hilarious. It's basically the dub cast came back, and the story is they did this, you know, like a trailer. Japanese creators liked it, asked them to do like the whole movie, and so they invited all the actors back. They didn't even pay them. All they paid them in was in beer and pizza.
That's awesome. Rednecks are so easily entertained.
Well, they're from Texas. It's in Texas, but
see,
no, I can't say that because there are people from Houston and Austin, and they're like the liberals of Texas. I know they're not rednecks. I've actually met them, but. They can do good redneck impressions because they're from Texas, and they know
Texans
redneck.
Are like Texans. They're not like really Southerners. They're just like their own thing because that state's big enough to be its own country.
But it's the thing of, you know, just like we're here at Uncle Stumpy's Bass Pro Shop with the giant and there's this sale, and oh, giant monsters are attacking in the subways. And like 90% of the people at home have one line going, "Holy crap!"
That's something you notice. Japanese have a very good sense of humor.
Yeah. And it's like, there's a part in the film where the helicopter is about to lift off, like to evacuate people. I'm like, can we hold the lift off? I got some diarrhea and I gotta let go. and everybody speaks in redneck except for the main actress. And it's very funny. It's like, she's very serious. She's like, I'll meet you up in your room. And he follows going, hell yeah.
Yeah, come on.
And of course, you have the main general talking specifically like Bill Clinton.
I can't even do a Clinton impersonation. I'm sorry. I just can't.
But there was two other impressions that were done during that film that were standout. One was a cop. He's trying to warn people, and the microphone, it sounds like the speaker is like off yet, but then it comes in, and it's kind of like the guy from Police Academy, who does all the voices, going, wah, 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 and that's his actual voice. And then, well, there's actually three, and then there's, at the final battle, not the main general, one of the sergeants that sounds like Bill Clinton. The main general sounds like a 5-year-old kid.
Wow.
And then there's this like radio guy. It's the cliche gay sounding guy. Like,
oh wow.
I don't think they're gonna like this.
Or, like, oh no.
Yeah. So like the kid going, what's the status? Somebody has his car parked in a no parking spot. And it's just, it's corny, it's kooky, and it's hilarious. And I wish they would release it separately on DVD. I don't know if they have the license anymore, though. But that overall is it, I think, for our very long first podcast. Hopefully soon, once we map out the details of when we're going to do this, we hope to have our first review where we're going to review the original. And we'll get more in depth.
Should we review the American and Japanese versions, both? Since they are.
Yeah, well, pretty
Or just sort of review, I guess, Raymond Burr's scenes.
Yeah, well,
as the
I think that you have the Gorgia release that came out a couple years ago.
Yes, the 2-disc, or the, I guess, the flip disc set.
Yeah, I have that too. So we have the same version, so that's what we'll do both. And I think
I'll watch two and take notes on both separately. Yeah. So.
We'll do both because, definitely we have, I think, you know, we can't do also the, not do the American version. Jesse, do you want to let people know where they might be able to find you?
I do have a comic books blog. That's, hold on, let me make sure I got the URL right, since I don't ever pimp it.
He's not well versed.
I don't know. I wasn't aware until Mike Bailey said that anybody's actually read it. Okay, that is jesseandthebeast.blogspot.com. And yes, you heard that right.
Wait a minute, what was that again?
Jesse and the Beast.
Ah, explains a lot. Sorry, couldn't help myself.
Most random title I've come up with, but it's memorable.
As I said at the beginning, there are many podcasts you can find me on. There have been podcasts I've guest starred on. But main one I do is the Spectacular Webs podcast, which I do with my good friend and co-host Donna Mark, where we are reviewing every episode of the Spectacular Spider-Man animation series, which came out a couple years ago. We feel it's one of the best Spider-Man cartoons ever to come out, and so we're reviewing every episode. Don is also the reviewer for the Spectacular Spider-Man on the Spider-Man Crawl Space, and that's another place you can find that podcast on. You can hear me on Walter Bowman's, or also as he's known, T.S. Champ's 5 Questions and Comic Book Nation on his Burning Questions blog. You can just search out Burning Questions on Podmatic and you'll find that.
And I'm on episode 2.
Yes, you are.
Which I just realized.
But our Spectacular Webs is also on Podmatic, as this podcast probably will be too. I am also a contributor for the Shaft podcast, which stands for the Super Happy Anime Funtime Podcast. I provide a bit called Thomas's Prerogative. We've just switched to video, so that's why we're low on numbering, but we've actually been around for 4 years. So I provide some content for them.
Okay, you said Shaft, and I was so thinking of, you know, Shaft? Like the blaxploitation films.
Yeah.
Which would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, they pretty much are the Shaft of anime fandom. That's the point. You know, definitely go check us out over there. You can find us at animeshaft.com. I have, again, things I'm going to just shout out different podcasts that we want you to listen to because they're awesome. The Spider-Man Crawl Space, Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, and the other 6 million podcasts.
Yeah.
Tales from the JSA, Back to the Bins.
From Crisis to Crisis.
A Superman podcast where he's reviewing every Superman. Him and his co-host are reviewing every Superman from Superman Man of Steel in, what was it, 1986, all the way up to like the one like before Final, or if,
yeah, 2000 is, I believe.
Yeah,
I don't remember, but
like 2004 or something. Tales from the JSA is basically reviewing every JSA book, and Back to the Bins is sort of both of which he does with Scott H. Gardner. Back to the Bins, he just goes through back issues, so check those out. The Major Spoilers podcast, it's a great podcast to check out. The Unique Geek podcast, because I'm dedicated to pimping out everybody that's helped me along the way.
Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing with any of this because they're all great shows.
Yes. Better in the Dark with Tom DJ.
One of my favorites. Yeah. Tom DJ and Derek Ferguson.
Yeah.
If you like movies, go listen to it.
And the final podcast we'll pimp is, we sort of said the only Godzilla. That's kind of not true. There is one podcast we found that's really dedicated to Godzilla, Kaiju Cast, and we want to give a big thank you personally to them. We are happy that we were not the, we would like to be the first, but we're happy that we weren't the first and only podcast dedicated to Godzilla. We both,
yeah, listened. Because they deserve a lot. He deserves tons and tons of podcasts, so it's kind of hard to believe there's only one other one that we've found so far.
Yeah,
very important. It's an enjoyable show.
Yeah, I'm trying to pick up his portfolio, but yeah, he's done it before us. We want to give him all the credit for being the first, or at least as far as we know. His name is Kyle Jones. I hope he doesn't mind us saying his name, but he runs Kaiju Cast, and it's dedicated not just to Godzilla, but all giant monsters.
Yeah, so it's not the exact same thing as ours.
Yeah, I think both of us just started listening to it, because in research we went up to see what podcasts there were. And we found his podcast, and we just started listening to his. And, you know, he plays music, and it's great to be listening to all the old Godzilla music.
Yes. Very left awesome.
kind of left you in silence there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just like, well, I mean, you said everything I wanted to say about it. So, I mean, he does do a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
And what he does good is he gets people on the show that don't know Godzilla or that aren't familiar. And he gets a lot of different opinions about it.
Yeah. So, dude, keep Kaiju Cast up. We're very proud of you. We're glad that you were the first, and we want to give you all the props of being the first. So, definitely go check that out. You can find it at www.kaijucast.com. That's Kaiju, K-A-I-J-U, cast.com. And that's pretty much it. We don't have an email address up yet. We will have the first show, and we hope that you can send us fan mail. You can probably search us out on Facebook. And if you know us and you have any fans, just let us know.
Facebook, try to get a fan page up if possible. My blog will more than likely just have a link up by the end of the week.
Yeah, we will get pages for this up. So that's it for the first episode of Tokyo SOS. A Godzilla podcast. So, until we meet again. Run! It's Godzilla!
Gojira!
Oh no, they say he it, George. Steve Martin signing off from Tokyo, Japan.